Welcome, everybody, to another glorious episode of Such Good Shoot, the podcast about wrestling and sometimes other things that are not wrestling. I am Isaac. Right over there, we got Shane, and we got two very special guests today because Dozer is on a donkey ride down the Grand Canyon. First off, we have Anthony Blackwell Jr. joining us from the Tornado Tag Pod and various other pods that we will get into a little later. And back again, the one and only, the fucking wrestling Rain Man himself, DDJ of What Do You Say with DDJ. Thank you both for joining us this evening. How's it going? Welcome.
Well, thanks.
Oh, go ahead. You go first, TJ.
Thank you. I was going to say, thanks for having me on. And Isaac, man, that is one awesome shirt you are rocking there.
Yeah, no, I know, man. I pulled it out and I said, you know what? This is.
Wait. You're talking about the shirt, right?
Well, yes.
Okay.
Yes. Oh, hi, Nat.
Yes, Nat's here. Sorry. We have to drink. And I would like to take a moment. And I'm sorry, I did ask you how you're doing. And I'm not going to forget that, Anthony, but before we really get going, I do want to raise a glass to Norm MacDonald, who is a comedian who I love and respect. Nothing to do with professional wrestling at all, but I was very sad to hear he passed from a 10-year battle with cancer. So,
yeah. Which nobody knew about.
What are we drinking tonight, boys?
I'm actually at my mom's house right now. She's downstairs sleeping, so I'm not drinking anything.
You can't have beers when your mom's sleeping? What's happening right now?
My mom has never had a bit of alcohol in her life, and there's no alcohol in the house.
I got the 8%. I got the 8% lemonade, and then the Twisted Tea. I'm doing Arnold Palmer's.
Little raspberry tea.
Yes, little raspberry tea. But
what's Shane drinking?
Yeah.
Oh, I mean, everyone Bush. Already knows. It's just some Bush good heavy. Old-fashioned Bush Heavy from right down the road. Now, right. I was going to say, what are you drinking?
I'm drinking New Trail Brewing Company out of Pennsylvania. This is an 11.5 ABV triple hazy IPA.
This is as good as...
That sounds like my kind of thing. Even though I'm drinking Busch, and I always drink Busch, I'm a big craft beer guy.
And that's what I was going to say. This is a perfect segue into... Can you just tell us a little bit about at least one of your other podcasts right now, Anthony?
Oh, yeah. So I do a show. We will be live actually this Sunday if you check out Banging Beers Podcast, or you can search the IWEP Network. So we're going to be drinking a bunch of beers this Sunday. The fun thing is sometimes we do double shots where we record an episode and then we take a break and then we go live one episode, then stop and then record another episode for the next Sunday. So usually the Sundays we're not live are the fucking we're hammered face shit based episodes.
So what do you guys talk about?
We review beers from that we can find in the area in Pennsylvania or any states that we can get them in and review them. Sometimes we have the brewers come on and we interview them and talk about the beers themselves. Sometimes we go to local businesses and local breweries and get to try their beers on location. It's a lot of fun. And then we just kind of shoot the shit in between and talk about maybe a movie or TV or somehow I always sneak professional wrestling in there. And we just kind of drink some beers with some friends and have some fun.
So are you out of Pennsylvania area?
Yes.
Then?
Yep. Okay. I'm right outside of Pottsville, Pennsylvania, which is the home of Yingling beer. And also, we'll sneak professional wrestling in this again. In Pottsville, Pennsylvania, a brand new brewery opened up called Pilgeroo Brewing Company, and it's owned by that guy right there, the former ROH Television Champion Tony Deppen, who will be wrestling Ron Funches tomorrow night.
Isaac, have you ever checked out Tony Deppen?
No, sir.
You would love Tony. He's just wrestle and he likes to beat people up.
I dig that. That's my season.
Some of the best facial expressions in professional wrestling,
I
too.
That's why I like Suzuki.
One of my co-hosts on my podcast that you call Shooting.
No, absolutely fucking not.
His mom's
downstairs. I don't care. You know what?
Okay. So if she would have, she's sleeping right now because we've got to be up
just
very early tomorrow.
Fucking scream then. So you're just shooting. Yell.
No, I'm not going to scream. Just to make Isaac happy, because I don't want him to be in a sour mood the rest of the show. No, here.
You don't.
On the podcast that I do called Shooting Shit.
Thank you.
My boys, Yvonne and Joe. Joe is a huge Tony Deppen fan. So, yeah, he can go. And I heard the exchange that Deppen had with Ron Funches on Busted Open a couple days ago. And I actually kind of want to see Tony Deppen kick his ass.
Tony Deppen's is fucking amazing. And everyone should be fans of him. Tweet that, Tony. I said that. Retweet it.
All right. Capture it. Retweet it.
Yeah.
Well, so Shane is a big beer drinker. So I'm sure that at some point you guys have to get together on that show, because
absolutely.
I used to mail Shane a shit ton of beer absolutely from up in Vermont. Oh,
sorry, that's your voices.
Wait. Told you're here after all.
I'm around Hill Farmstead Brewery. I mean, like, Vermont is just like, it really is fucking incredible. Like, just within probably like 2 miles of me, I have like maybe 4 breweries. So I would send Shane a lot of beer, and then some douchebag at FedEx got drunk on Shane and I's dime.
But yeah, Anthony, if you ever get a chance to, you know, obtain like Hill Farmstead or like Treehouse stuff.
Oh, I love Treehouse. We've had Treehouse on the show a bunch of times.
You gotta try Hill then. Hill is unlike any other beer company I've ever tried, and I had a lot of their beers. It's so okay. Interesting.
Yeah, and I might know somebody who might know somebody who might have access to some of their beers.
Yeah, find out if they start shipping to Pennsylvania. We'll get it right away.
They do not ship. They don't ship anywhere. The dude is a fucking nut job, like absolute nut job. But if you go on like Rate Beer in those places, he's won best brewer in the world like five out of 6 years or
holy
something.
Hannah.
Yeah, I think he's like in the last.
They
like,
love brewing with honey.
Yeah, he does. Honey. He does. Yeah, he does a lot of like wild fermentation and shit like that. Really cool stuff. But yeah. So anyway, that's a little bit of what he does. Shane, I have a
beer shoot, man.
I have a question for you. Yeah. Oh, such suds shoot. I don't know. Here's speaking of drinking. Here's Nat. We got a drink. Shane, do you have a Sheik of the Week for us?
I saw one earlier, but then completely forgot. One second.
I mean, if you don't, I shared one. I shared one from our Twitter just the other day. Because, well, it's going back to what we talked about pretty early on.
I got one.
Oh,
I
you got one? Okay, well then we won't do it.
Just from 2 days ago. The Iron Sheik was watching Monday Night Football, and he had this to say: Lamar, you worse than the Jermaine Tito and Jabroni LaToya Jackson tonight. Bubba, what the fuck?
God damn, dude.
Guy's a legend.
The same guy who runs that fucking Twitter runs Virgil's Twitter, too.
I was at a show at Virgil a couple weeks ago.
Did he try and charge you for a photo?
No, he came up and told me some fun stories, though.
He fucking Virgil, dude. I tried to get him as a guest on the show, right? And he hit me back, and he was like,
$500
bucks. Like, well, no, he's like, how much? I was like, dude, $100. And he's like, how about $150? And I was like, whatever, okay, I'll do $150, fucking. And he's like, all right, cool. And then he just never hit me back. He like totally agreed to the money. And then he just was like, yeah, no. And I'm like, all right, so I was like, I'm not chasing fucking Virgil.
Dude, when the show I was at, he set up, first one set up, and they were literally tearing the ring down and all the fans were gone. And then he tore down his table.
The dude is a fucking, he grinds. You got to give the man credit.
He absolutely grinds.
I mean, Jesus Christ, he'll, like, he has the Ted DiBiase shit, like, and he's just like, come on, dude, Ted DiBiase ain't interesting, bro.
He's coming next time. That's what he always just tell us, that he'll be here tomorrow.
Where is he? He ain't coming. He don't like you, man. He never liked you.
He's a snake oil salesman, man.
Yeah. very
shout at this guy until someone buys something.
Yeah. Yeah. But it, hell, dude, he does it. He makes that money, so good for him, I guess. I don't know. I'd still like to get him on, but I'm afraid of all the meat sauce talk he's gonna fucking bring with him.
Yeah. Yeah, that show I was at was Virgil, Rachel Edling, Rock and Roll Express, Bushwhacker Luke, and Sonny were all at that show.
God damn. Sonny's another one I want to get on.
Yeah.
And on the podcast.
I see what you said.
Nailed it.
Speaking of Sonny, she was on the pay-per-view that I think we watched. At least I watched, Shane watched, but I think we all watched it.
Sure. At one point in time in my life, Jesus, I've seen this pay-per-view. Yeah.
This is the SummerSlam 1997. This is
I give the quick intro to this.
Yeah, do it. Give it to me.
This is SummerSlam. Was the 10th annual SummerSlam professional wrestling pay-per-view event produced by the World Wrestling Federation. WWF then, now WWE, took place August 3rd, 1997 at the Continental Airlines Arena in East Rutherford, New Jersey. It was attendance was 20,213 people. The tagline to this show was called Heart and Soul.
Heart, H-A-R-T, like,
yep. Threat. And the quick background to this is an annual pay-per-view produced in every August by WWE since 1988, dubbed the biggest party of the summer, one of the promotion's original four pay-per-views, along with WrestleMania, Royal Rumble, and Survivor Series, eventually dubbed the Big Four. It became WWF's second biggest event of the year following WrestleMania, and the 1997 event was the 10th in the SummerSlam's chronological.
Whew, God damn, dude.
Yeah.
All right. We'll take it. I think, you know, we had Vince, Jim Ross, and Jerry Lawler on commentary, which is actually a very good commentary team for this pay-per-view. Even Jerry wasn't too obnoxious at this point. But
I didn't think it was as strong as what it was the past couple shows, but it was still fine.
I like Vince a lot. I'm a sucker for his commentary.
He's very underrated as a commentator, I think.
I do think it was funny that they kind of started shit off by giving fucking Christy Todd Whitman a fucking it's like, what is it, the WWF championship. Because she fucking like knocked the taxes off. And I mean, it was like crazy. It was like $100,000 in taxes to put on a pay-per-view.
Yeah, because it was the first, it was what, like the first professional wrestling show they had in Jersey in like 7 years or something?
Pay-per-view. Like pay-per-view.
Well, was it pay-per-view or was it just show? No,
pay-per-view.
Yeah. I thought they said just show.
No, it was because like the rule applied to sporting event pay-per-views. So if it was like a boxing event, like you had to pay, like, because they did a lot of those in Atlantic City. So it was like a way for them to make some income. But basically he went and like convinced them that it was just entertainment and it shouldn't be charged that same tax. So they hadn't done a pay-per-view in Jersey. I think it was 9 years or something like that. And it was also, I think this was like when this was the thing that really like broke out like the sports entertainment and not wrestling. This is sort of the beginning of that. So first match of the night, fucking Mankind, Mick Foley starts the match. Dude Love ends up beating Triple H in a steel cage match. 16 minutes, 24 seconds. This was a great match to start off a pay-per-view.
Yeah, and we got to see a lot more of this this rivalry, or these two work together for a while going into the future. This is the first of many times that they will square off.
Yeah, this is kind of like a big deal because it was like them trying to get Mick Foley like into more than just Mankind and like get that Dude Love character over.
And this was also really like the beginnings of the rise of Triple H to the top. This was kind of like really when he had just won King of the Ring a couple months earlier by beating Mankind. Then they had that wild brawl at the Canadian Stampede pay-per-view.
Oh, so good. That was so fucking good. That pay-per-view was awesome.
Yeah. That's one of their all-time best and stuff. Mm-hmm. But yeah, this was just a great opener. And I remember 17-year-old me being confused because I'm like, wait a minute. I thought he wasn't playing Mankind anymore, you know. He had moved on to Dude Love, you know. This is kind of really, I was just starting to understand, you know, the concept of gimmicks and character. Like, I was really kind of starting to come into the fandom or, you know, be turning into the wrestling fan that I am now and stuff, you know. And it's just, but it was still really cool. And I think one of the highlights of the match was, Mick, you know, getting that Superfly Jimmy Snuka moment when he, you know, dropped the elbow from the top of the cage. And I think they even made mention of that, you know, when he did that or something.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the idea was he opens his shirt. He had the big heart on his chest.
Yeah, the tattoo.
But it all.
He had a big heart on.
Yeah, nice.
He did.
Hell yeah. See, I like you, man. You're good shit.
He fits in, man. He fits in.
But yeah, it was like. Yeah, that one didn't work. I think the moment for me, I mean, that was awesome, but the moment for me was Mick Foley taking that headshot from the fucking cage door in China.
Oh.
Because he's like crawling out and she fucking wham. And it hits him full on. And that sound is fucking loud.
He's
like,
psycho.
Yeah. And she, and you know, and like China, you know, like she wasn't very good. Like, it was like the awkward, I think the most awkward part is her like climbing onto the cage to get knocked off the cage. She's just standing there on the cage and sort of looking in, and you're like, all right, you got up there a little early now, didn't you?
Yeah. I hate to bring it to like modern day times, but we just had like a little bit of a Mick Foley situation or a moment that reminded me a lot of like behind the mask, behind the tape DVD. After that cage match at AEW, when Pentagon went and hugged his kids and like they're bawling their eyes out, looking at their dad just putting on the craziest performance they've ever seen in their life. It's like, oh my God, it's gotta be hard to go back behind the curtain and seeing your kids like devastated that they just seen you like bloody mess.
And honestly, especially for like a match that's like a 1.75.
Oh, that's rough. That's rough.
But anyway,
we'll quickly move on before someone smokes out of people's ear.
But honestly, like, this match was a really fun match. Foley and fucking Triple H were great. Foley is still out of his fucking mind and took a lot of crazy fucking bumps. Ended up winning by getting out of the cage and basically falling on his ass again. That match, Foley is awesome. Triple H is awesome. It's a good match to start things off. I think it was a three-star match.
Pretty insane to start off your pay-per-view with a cage match. Right. One of many awesome stipulations we'll have tonight.
Yes. Yeah, a lot of stipulations.
Didn't like every match on the show have a stipulation almost?
Pretty much, I think. I mean, maybe all of them. I mean, there was
some type of gimmick to everything.
Yeah, we'll definitely get to all, because Jesus Christ, there were a lot. So yeah, that was a steel cage match. I don't know if there was a gimmick to the next match, I give this one 3 stars. We'll get our ratings out of the way and we'll move on.
I'll go with 3 as well. Solid opener.
3.5.
3 sounds good to me.
Ooh, we were close. We were close. Well, I got a drink for DJ. Shane there drinking. Nat's in the picture. God damn, it's 3 drinks for me.
Well, don't make it sound like you're being burdened with it. You're probably relishing.
Listen.
I eventually got to lock that cat out of the room. I'm drinking 11% beers over here.
Yeah, I know, dude. You just wait till he knocks the camera over.
Oh, dude, that hasn't happened in.
I got the new camera. It's pretty stable up here. We're pretty good. Oh, Facebook user, where is Dozer? I don't know who the Facebook Dozer is. On a donkey somewhere in the Grand Canyon.
Guadalajara
Grand Canyon. It's the other Grand. It's the other Grand Canyon.
And then
it's spelled with an E. Grande Cañones.
And then friend of the show and my co-host on Shooting Shit. There you go, Isaac. I did it again. Jovan Minacho saying, look at these beautiful MFers. Thank you,
Jovan. Okay, no, no. Thank you so much. No, no, Jovan. No, fuck you, Jovan. Fuck you very much. We say motherfuckers on our show. We don't need to abbreviate anything. I'm sick of all this censorship.
It was probably just easier.
Okay, you're right. I worked with a chef who he would always call the cooler the ice box.
Oh,
and like the fridge, the ice box. And I was like, why do you call it the ice box? He's like, because I can't spell refrigerator.
This is honest. I like it.
I remember a refrigerator being called an ice box when I was a kid. I think my mom used to say that.
I can't spell refrigerator. Oh, shit.
We will go uncensored one day. So this person's censoring their Facebook name.
Is that Joe? That might be Joe.
Yeah.
Anyway, so yeah. Next match
does have a stipulation, duh.
The Gold Dust and sure Brian does. Pillman. Oh, yeah. What was the stipulation on that?
Yeah,
they had to wear a dress.
Yeah.
Dress. Oh, god damn it! God damn it! Yep.
Yeah, this one kind of sucked.
Yeah, this one
which is upsetting because Pillman is. Like everyone in this match involved is someone I really enjoy their career. Like I love Dustin, Goldust. I love Brian Pillman. Marlena is probably the first woman I seen in my life that I was like, yeah, I'm into girls.
Oh my god, dude! You look at her in this, and I'm like, she's smoking a cigar, which is already like
glass of whiskey.
Very nice.
Yeah.
And goddamn, dude, blasting nips like.
Marlena was that one of the first women I've seen in my life, and I was like,
oh dude, yeah,
yeah, that's my thing. I'm into that.
I would eat the corn out of her shit, dude, for sure.
I don't know if I'd go that far, but I think she's very beautiful.
She's joined that.
You don't know Isaac very well, then.
Yeah, no, Marlena for sure, dude. Come on, man.
You haven't brought that one out in a while, so I did. I didn't even know there was still a metric.
Sometimes with her, you gotta be a little bit more discreet with the special ones.
the issue was that Brian Pillman was already so like not himself, or at least not up to his
pool. Is this pre?
This is
after the accident.
This is post motorcycle accident.
Yeah.
I think his
entire WWF run was post motorcycle accident.
Motorcycle or truck accident.
This is a month and a half before he died.
The one that fucked his back up. I think it was either his back or his legs up.
Yeah, really the legs bad. was the truck accident because he was ejected from the truck.
It's
tough because, like you were saying, they're all so good.
Mm-hmm. And they both tried really hard. I don't think it was like an effort situation. I mean, one, the match was short.
Yes, it was seven minutes, 17 seconds.
Granted, Pillman's condition, who knows? You know what I mean? If it would have been worse, if it would have gone longer.
Was there a low blow to the finish?
I really don't. I watched the show like a week and a half ago.
I think Marlena hit a low blow on Pillman.
Oh, yeah. And then, no. She hit him in the head with something. And then Goldust, like, flipped it. Yeah, flipped it into a sunset roll. And then she threw the mannequin at him. And Jerry Lawler was like, there must be a brick in there or something. Mm-hmm. Did you hear that sound?
That was her gimmick before she was Marlena in WWE. We were just talked about in the podcast the other day. She was like a computer nerd, and she would bring like a laptop.
Oh, yeah.
And at the time, the laptop was huge.
Alexandra York of the York Foundation.
Yeah. So that.
Yeah, dude. Fucking ADDJ.
Yeah, DDJ would get amazing along with my co-host Brian.
A WWE Hall of Famer himself told me in person that I'm the greatest wrestling trivia guy he's ever seen.
Yeah,
you and my co-host Brian would be the mega powers of wrestling knowledge.
I'm telling you,
you'll have to hook me up with him sometime. Connect me to him.
Yeah,
Anthony, this motherfucker here. He went one-on-one with the Godfather in trivia about the Godfather's career, and they went to like double overtime on fucking questions because they kept staying tied. And Godfather's like, I don't know that shit.
He cut that promo on me, like mid.
He went off on you. Yeah, you got upset. You got upset because there were Katie just came a point where he's like, "All right, fuck you, man. I know more about my shit than you do. Stop it."
How big's my dick? I win, bitch.
No, it was like, technically. What color robe was I wearing? How many hoes
did I have? What were their hair colors? Do you remember?
So good. I do. It was so great. It was great. And that's when you tapped out, by the way. You did tap out. That means you quit. So I continue.
I'm laughing so hard. I didn't quit. I still say you stacked the deck against me because you were trying to make the Godfather look good.
Of course he's the Godfather. Yeah, dude. Of all the wrestlers, like, can you imagine one that is more like in line with fucking everything I love in life?
No.
No, no. You can't. You really can't. It's pretty perfect. So, like, RVD is kind of up there, but he still exercises too much. He's Godfather is the perfect mix of fucking boobs and ass and weed and fucking being like, I don't really want to fight. I'll give you this bitch over here. God, that was a great gimmick. I'll give you hoes to throw the fight. So good. So good. But yeah, this match. Isaac,
what do you think about the match?
It was not that great. It was not that great. I was much more interested in Marlena's nip nips than I was the match itself, which means it was a 1.5.
Gee, what a shocker! Isaac was more interested in boobs than an actual match.
Hey, listen. I'm not a tits man. I'm not an ass man. Okay, it's not like that. I'm a vagina man.
I had no idea where you were going with that, and I was like, oh, there it is.
But DDJ, I'll tell you the one thing that will distract Isaac more in a wrestling match than tits, ass, or pussy.
He's gonna tell you, and it's true. I already know what's coming.
It's red shoes from New Japan.
It is 100%.
I got him into New Japan, and I was showing him like, it doesn't matter what it was, but it was like classic New Japan stuff.
Incredible matches.
It was like the Kenny. It was the Kenny Jericho match. It was that one, and I was like, Isaac, shut the fuck up about red shoes. He was like, can't stop looking at him. I'm like,
I love him.
Like, you're watching Jericho's first match outside of the WWE since he fucking, like, please.
That happened to me live with Rob Van Dam and Rhino. They were in a match, an Impact match at a paper at a local promotion, and two ECW legends. This is my first time really at an independent scene, and I'm super excited. I get to see these great fucking legends of my dime, and Katie Forbes is on the outside of the ring just twerking the whole time, and I didn't see a second of the match.
Yes. Red Shoes is a little different because Red Shoes is not that cute. Well, he is. No, Red Shoes is very
Red Shoes turns you on just as much as Marlena, dude. No,
See, Marlena turns on a lust. Right, a ravenous lust for a fucking.
You're saying you don't lust over red shoes.
No, you want to be committed to red shoes, right?
Yeah, he turns on my heart, dude, and my soul, and like my passion for life and sunsets and fucking hearing the waves crash on a beach.
Walked on the beach holding hands.
It sounds like you're in love with red shoes.
I'm not walking anywhere, DDJ. I'm just sitting on the beach. I'm sitting, okay. Yeah, I am kind of in love with red.
Is he like fanning you with one of those big like palm tree leaves or whatever?
No, we are equals. Like we are equals in this partnership. We have some whatever local person doing that for us. Not red shoes. Red shoes gets to sit in the sand, dude. Come on, it's red shoes. Be kind. Anyway, yes, no, Red Shoes will distract the hell out of me, as you can tell. He is one of the greatest referees of all time.
Real quick, the match itself was like a.
What did you like give
a
it?
A 1.75.
I gave it a 1.5. Damn, we were close. Yes.
I'm gonna give it a 1.5 as well too. I mean, yeah, it's just, you know, both these guys are super talented back in the day, but it was just a case of just. Just not the right time, no, not the right place, not the right time. You know, maybe 3-4 years ago, they would have had a really good match, you know, but.
Yeah, I agree with that. And I guess I should, man, I'm fucking slacking on my my dozer duties. The Mankind, Hunter match, Meltzer gave
two and a half
stars. The Goldust Pillman match, he gave a half star.
Yep.
He just goes off the rails sometimes. You just never know what. There's no consistency.
If Pillman and Goldust match happened in Japan, he would have gave it a 13 and a half. Let's just be honest.
Yeah, it was bad. It was very bad. Both. I mean,
so some of these matches that are actually good matches that are probably later on in the card are going to get certain numbers. If that match wasn't in a WWE setting, they would have got higher. Just Daniel Bryan has never been given a 5-star match in all in WWE or NXT.
Daniel Bryan's getting his first 5-star match the first time he wrestles in AEW.
But anyway, so what do we got next? We got Animal and Hawk versus the Godwins. Henry O. Godwin and Phineas I. Godwin, Hog and Pig, who as a kid, I actually really loved the Godwins. I thought they were great.
The Godwins are a team for me that I was like, why are they getting so much time on TV? Like, I just never understood it. And then as I get older, I'm like, oh, because they were part of the Undertaker clique. You know what I mean? Like, there was the clique and then the Undertaker. Yeah.
Yeah. But what did they turn into once they started wearing suits? What was it they were called?
Southern Justice.
Oh my god, yeah. Dude. Southern Justice, dude, was so dumb.
Yeah, they hung out with fucking Jeff Jarrett, right?
Yeah.
Oh my god, it was so dumb. This match again was dumb as well.
Oh, see, I didn't hate it. Like, I don't think it was great, but it was definitely better than Pillman versus Pillman versus Goldust.
Yeah, not agree, Uncle Dave, because he gave this one a half star too.
What?
Yep.
Yeah, dude. Dude, Dave has some crazy ratings on this one. Dude.
Are you kidding me?
No, dude.
Half a star. Man,
I think only three of the matches on this card got more than a star. From
Dave. Three matches got half a star. Yeah.
Yeah.
One of them was. Three quarters, right? Oh no, one and three quarters.
Yeah, but there was three half star matches.
Crazy. But yeah, it was a good tag match, and it was a good big hoss match. It wasn't anything exciting.
They beat the crap out of each other.
Yeah, yeah.
But I mean, that's what these guys were. You know, they always did to each other because I think it was stemming from. I think in a match like before the Godwins turned heel or something. Isn't that where? I think Henry got his neck broken in a match against the Road Warriors.
Yeah, and leading up to this, I don't remember which Road Warrior it was, but they were like, yeah, it was an accident the first time, but this time we're going to mean to do it. And it's like, did you just like premeditatedly say that you're going to break a guy's neck again?
Which is
Who am I supposed to be cheering for here? Because like, also, if I'm the Godwins, I'm mad as hell. Like I feel for them.
But also, like, hindsight being 2020, it's a weird thing to say during this pay-per-view. There's a lot of like very strange moments like that. Like Ross really during that match like telegraphs it in a weird way. But anyway,
and you make a joke about actually breaking someone's neck, and then later on in the night,
yeah, exactly. It's like fuck. But yeah, the Legion of Doom. I mean. There wasn't a lot to it. It was fairly short. It was 9 minutes, like 15. But it was a fine for what it was, but it wasn't anything special. Yeah, I was going to say it's a two.
I'll go with
two. Yeah, and then I'll start our next one here. Title match, right? You just had two stinkers back to back. You know, you're going to come in here. You're going to put on a great show with great talent. And you have the European Championship. The British Bulldog is your champion. Will defeat Ken Shamrock. And you've already had two stinkers, and you're going to have a fuck finish DQ.
I did. Oh, man. See, here's the thing. Is this match, the finish was terrible. Shamrock freaking out after was awesome. The crowd was really into that. Like, it was fucking a good moment for him to be like, this man is very intimidating and very scary when he's pissed off.
He's scary.
Extremely. Sure. And I think, yeah, but I think that was like, as a moment was like really good for him. I thought the match itself was actually really good. Like I enjoyed those two guys just like beating the fuck out of each other and like going hard, but the finish was dog shit and it took away so much from the match. And the match, you know, like for what it was good. It wasn't good enough for the finish to not matter, you know, in the outcome of it. So it's like, it was decent. And again, I love seeing Shamrock just fucking go ape shit. Like, I love that. I fucking love that.
Dude, Shamrock was so over in this time frame. I mean, I don't think he gets enough credit for how over he was during this period of time in the beginnings of the Attitude Era.
Oh, he was incredible. I remember like being like totally into him and Blackman, thinking him and Steve Blackman both were like terrifying, would just beat the fuck out of you in real life.
Shamrock Shamrock always just had the wrong place, wrong time moment in his career, because if he would have entered mixed martial arts maybe 3 or 4 years later, where he would have had a different training mindset when he was young. Like, so like if you would have kept him, if he just would have been born maybe 10 years after he was born, and he would have entered UFC maybe in like earlier ages when he would have focused more on the ground and pound and everything like that, he would have been one of the most dominant UFC champions of all time. And then if he would have jumped into WWE around the same time like a Kurt Angle was able to break in, they would have utilized him better as a killer and as a monster, instead of entering when it was the Bret and Shawn era and neither one of those guys were willing to relinquish that top spot. And it was a time in the company where he was considered an outsider, and he had a ceiling that he just wasn't going to break.
I think the biggest thing too is like the biggest drop ball with him. I mean, the timing thing is a great point. I think the biggest drop ball with him though is that they never took advantage of the fact that they had him and Dan Severin in the same company together and never did anything with it. Mm-hmm. They never did anything with like the two fucking greatest UFC fighters of all time at that.
And I
point.
Think that's a huge reason why I think a lot of your mixed martial arts fans aren't as willing to accept professional wrestling. Like once they switch over and become a MMA fan, they're like, yo, you had Dan Severn and Ken Shamrock and Tank Abbott and you made them into punks, and then your guys come over to our sport and they're jokes. Like it's that, I think that's where your rivalry started.
Except for Lesnar.
Who?
Very good point.
Brock Lesnar.
Yeah. But I mean, even like, I'm not hating on Lesnar, but like, Lesnar went in and beat up Randy Couture at the end of his career. He beat Heath Herring. He should have never beat Shane Carwin. And then when he started fighting some legit guys, he tried to stand and bang. He was not the same. Like, he beat Mark Hunt, juice to the gills. There's some asterisks.
Yeah, absolutely
next to,
yoked.
Yeah.
Yeah. Although he didn't lose.
I mean, but with the Mark Hunt fight, he didn't even stand and bang with him. He just hugged him to death on the ground. Like, yeah. I mean, he wrestled him.
Either way, the man has been the fucking UFC champion.
Let's just put into context too. I think the most title defenses at that time for the heavyweight championship belt was, I think, 3. So UFC's heavyweight division hasn't always been.
Either way, I don't give a shit.
Dominant, we'll say.
I mean, but that's the thing. I think that's the thing that's awesome about UFC is like the UFC. Everything outside the actual mat, like fights, for with some exceptions, obviously, is as close to old school professional wrestling as you can get.
Yeah, like, I mean, that's why I got back into wrestling after I walked away from it for MMA. I was like, all right, they're doing promos and they're just literally telling storylines to tell you into a fight. I might as well go back to WWE.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, that's I left because the ranking system was supposed to mean something and then it didn't. Like, it just came down to who shot the best promo would get a title shot.
Yeah. And in the end, like, I don't know. I don't like seeing anyone get actually hurt. You know, like, I don't really enjoy seeing people get fucking hurt. Like, I don't know. That's one of the things I like about pro wrestling is that in the end, like, you know that they're doing their best to try and protect each other.
Yeah. And, you know, and then when it does happen, you're like, oh, why the fuck would you do that?
Yeah, exactly. And it's like, you know, call me crazy, but...
No, that's why I have a hard time with death matches.
Yeah, Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. Fuck that Nick Gage dude. That dude called
me out. I didn't say that. He did. He, right
called, he called me out. He called me out. So whatever.
Isaac, you should take it to him on Twitter, dude.
You had Nick Gage personally know you and then call you out?
Oh, you want to see? You want to see the fuck? Well, we can just play it.
I'm terrified if I want to be on this podcast anymore. Like, I don't.
Here we go. This is a cameo that I was gifted from Shane.
God, this shit, Nick fucking Gage. And I start this shit off by shouting out my murder, death, kill gang members around the fucking world. I shout out that my motherfucking boys locked down in their cells, including my motherfucking boy 2-6, Eastern Block. And I shout out my motherfucking hate club, RIP Big Nate Hatred, and RIP my brother Justice Payne. And I want to give a shout out to Isaac. And I want to let Isaac know I could give two fucking shits if you like deathmatch wrestling or not. I could care less what type of wrestling you like. But I'll tell you what. My motherfucking gang likes deathmatch wrestling. And I love deathmatch wrestling. And I'm going to keep doing that shit till I can't do it no more. Isaac, I could give two fucking shits if you like deathmatch wrestling or any type of wrestling you like. So keep doing what the fuck you do, and I'll keep doing what the fuck I do. And if you want to take it there, we can take it there, man. And we can run into each other, and we can have a convo and take it from there. But if you want to come on here and say you don't like deathmatch wrestling, man, that shit don't affect me at all. I'm one in a million, motherfucker. I run my motherfucking MDK gang, and I do it with fucking hard work and dedication. I do it because I'm the realest motherfucker in the game. I do it because I be my motherfucking self. I ain't no fake motherfucker like the rest of them motherfuckers in the locker room. So fuck you, Isaac, and shout out to my murder, death, kill gang all fucking day.
Did you pay for that? How much did you pay for that?
Isaac, we've lost you.
No. I just had to reset my camera. I'm here. Shane paid $50 for that.
$50 for that.
And the first 3 minutes was just him getting his shout outs out. Then just say, go fuck yourself.
Hey, man, I got to shout out the fucking dudes. 2-6 in East Block for selling meth. He's in there for the next 6 months.
Wow.
Anthony, have you ever?
I'm not saying anything negative about Nick Gage because there is a possibility with the crowd I roll in that I may run into him, and I'm just gonna say I love Nick Gage.
Smart man.
Yeah.
Have you ever done the cameo thing?
I have not. No.
Okay, so when you do it, like you click on who you want, right? So Nick Gage, and then it'll say like price, and then like once you agree to the price, you'll go into like a little like questionnaire. And it's like, what do you want to do? Do you need like a happy birthday shout out? Is this just like an uplifting thing? Is it a roast or is it other? So I was like, roast.
It'd be funny if you click birthday, like, fuck you, Isaac, and your birthday.
Fuck your birthday. Your birthday's fucking shit, dog.
But it's like, it's like, what would you like Nick Gage to know about Isaac? And I was like, I don't fucking know. I was like, he just like hates deathmatch wrestling and anything fun. I was like, just like say mean things about
him. I love fun stuff. You hate fun.
And then in the next box was, what does Isaac like about Nick Gage? So all I put was just nothing with a period and then moved on.
Awesome. It's awesome because it's true. I think he's dog shit.
No,
my buddy somehow always ends up reffing his matches at GCW, and he was in the match when the beer can started flying with Cardona, and he almost got pelted with like six bottles. Yeah.
Jesus.
Yeah, kid ref, Chris Levin. No,
I've watched a couple of GCW shows. Yeah, that was the first GCW show I watched, and I've watched a couple since.
I want to say shout out to him. Shout out to Chris the Vin, you fucking gangster. He got the belt and handed it to him while he's getting killed with cans.
Damn, dude.
So DDJ, what did you rate this match that we've been talking about?
totally been talking about.
Oh yeah, I've never heard a match description quite like this. So
this is British Bulldog versus Ken Shamrock.
I would say it was, like you said, it was a good match up until the ending. It was kind of wonky, and if I remember correctly, I think the stipulation was the loser had to eat dog food or something like that.
Yes.
But I would say,
but it didn't happen.
I would say a solid 2.5. It could have been a 3 if it wasn't for that finish. And since we're doing shout outs real quick, I just want to give a shout out to my boy Nick Carpenter over on the Wrestling Nerd Broadcast. He became a father for the first time earlier today as his wife gave birth to a handsome little boy. So Nick, congratulations, man.
Congratulations. And if you're watching this podcast, instead of dealing with all that shit, you're a moron.
Oh man.
We had that one night. We had a dude who was like in the hospital. His wife's giving birth. He's like, "Hey, I'm watching your podcast." I'm like, "Go."
Oh, I remember that.
I had my first person come up to me in person at a show that had nothing to do with professional wrestling. Oh, I mean, not fully had anything to do with professional wrestling, but I went to a Fozzy concert locally. And then after the Fozzy concert, I'm all fucking drunk and shit.
There's a lot of shit that went down like with everybody involved that, yeah, it's just.
And this injury really was a huge setback on Austin's career and pretty much a huge reason why he walked away from the company probably so early.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. And I mean, you know, like for good reasons. But I will say I actually was watching this match and my roommate came down and he was like, "Oh, I'm going to go to the gym." I'm like, "Cool, man. Yeah, I'm just watching this. This match kind of sucks because, like, this dude, like, Stone Cold's about to get his neck broken." And, like, we watched it. And, like, I think the thing that, like, is the most shocking is just how fucking crazy WWF was at the time. And not only the fact, like, that Stone Cold was, like, able to do what he did, but, like,
Earl allowed it.
Not only that, but Earl Hebner sat him up. Like, he was, like, moving him around, and, like...
He literally said to Earl, like, "I can't move. Like, yeah. I can't feel anything." And this is where it's tough when you add silly stipulations. Like, I know it's story, and you can just be like, "We're just not fucking doing it," but, like, a part of him is like, "I'm not kissing his fucking ass." Like, it's one thing that okay, he retains his title and I move on. But now I have to fucking muster up the strength to do this horrible roll up and win this match because even the title doesn't even mean anything at this point. I am just the way my character is. I'm not kissing his ass.
Mm-hmm. And it's such a weird moment because like Owen immediately realizes what happened.
Yeah,
he immediately realized. He like goes for the pin and immediately hops up and he's like, "It's over. He's done." And then he starts doing, "He's gonna kiss my ass."
Yeah, well, he was doing that so Earl can talk to him. And
he didn't know it. It was like 20 seconds and like it felt like much longer. Mm-hmm. But
the replays is tough to watch.
Yeah,
because his legs are here for the pile driver and Austin's head.
And you just see the head straight out. Yeah. You just see it. It's truly like very, very difficult to watch. I think one of the other moments like that is the shooting star press from Lesnar at Mania is another moment that's very difficult to watch for me.
Sid breaking his leg in WCW.
That's the worst.
And the fact that they they 100% didn't get him the treatment he probably deserved after this, and they're like, "Do what you have to do to get back in here because we need you because we're losing these ratings."
Yeah, I mean, Stone Cold
doesn't come back and fucking do what he does, it's a huge chance that, you know, this whole a lot of things that happen in wrestling doesn't happen.
Well, and the other thing is if it wasn't a private company at that point, that never would have happened. If it was a publicly traded company, that would have never happened.
Mm-hmm.
There's zero chance that he continues to do anything without going and getting immediate surgery and dealing with all that shit. Like they just you can't do that with stock with shareholders and stuff with your. I mean, it's one of the reasons why they're so careful with everybody. You mm-hmm. know, it's like you kind of have to be. But yeah, this match up until that point is the best match of the night. Yeah, it's tough because the match itself was a 4.5 star match all the way through. No, like the wrestling was really good. I fucking was so into it. Owen and Stone Cold could go. And then he gets his neck broken and it's a 1-star. It's a 1-star match because of that. It's just too much. There's too much.
It's hard to go back. It's hard to go back knowing how it ends.
No, especially with Jim Ross being like, "Oh, he's gonna break his neck." And oh shit. Okay, after this, we totally glazed over the most important part of the show. And I feel weird going from something so serious, but we got to remember the $1 million giveaway fiasco. We got to talk about that.
Oh man.
But yeah, so what do we got for ratings on this match?
I agree with the rating system. It should have been right where it was, maybe if higher if the injury doesn't happen, but it is a match that it's not high on my list to go back and rewatch, even though I love both this talent because of the way it ends.
Yeah, very hard to watch.
It's like I'm a Washington fan, and I'm not going to go back and watch – I don't go back and watch Joe Theismann's leg snap, you know. speaking of that, I don't even know what the score of that game is.
I'm a Chicago Bears fan, and I won't go back and watch their Sunday night stinker against the Rams. So yeah, I know how you feel there.
Yeah, what are y'all fucking doing playing Andy Dalton? By the way,
don't ask me. If I were the head coach, Justin Fields would have started.
Yeah, why not? I don't know. I didn't love this match as much as you guys did. Throughout, you know, the actual match itself up until the injury, I didn't think it was bad, but I don't love Stone Cold around this time. Right. I just don't.
You're wrong. But what's your rating?
I don't. I mean, it's like, yeah, it's like a. I don't know. I liked it less, so it's like a 0.5.
Oh,
wow. I think Isaac, you said, you know, injury doesn't occur. You're looking at a solid 4-star match or something like that.
4.5 for me. I mean, it's everything I want.
I'm gonna cut it right down the middle. I'm gonna say 2.25.
Okay. All right. Well, that leaves us with we're gonna talk about this $1 million giveaway for a minute because I think I titled the show something about this. They decide to do a thing where they give away a fucking $1 million in a coffin, and it's so convoluted. They have 100 fucking tags and keys on a board. They pull a little kid, like a fucking like 12-year-old kid and a fucking dude out of the audience to pick numbers. And then for some god-awful reason, they have Todd Pettengill, Sonny, and Sable cold calling people. And they're calling like the first three people they call, like nobody answers. Like one number is like out of order. And it's getting like desperate. Todd's barely able to read the numbers. They finally get somebody on the line. They're like, "Are you watching SummerSlam right now?" "No, not watching." "Well, that's all right. Well, my cable company, it doesn't offer it."
Live on pay-per-view. They're having a conversation. Yeah.
And so he like picks a number and like they're trying to like you open the keys and none of the keys open and it's just like dragging. Then they're calling again. They finally get some woman. They're like, "Are you watching?" She's like, "No." She's not watching. She picks a number. Nobody wins. None of the keys open. And then they're like, "Well, if people had picked the number 3, you know, like you would have won a fucking coffin full of $1 million bills."
I would have. And the funny thing is like you never try to leave it to chance for that because of those reasons where you make your company possibly look weaker than it already is, just losing the ratings. Like that's when you bring back the $1 million man and say like pick a number kid, and then he screws it and steals the money anyway. Like there's so many things you could have did here. They tried to do a legit thing and it backfired really
and
hard
they've
on
done,
them.
And they've done it like multiple times too. This isn't the only, like this might be the first time they tried the $1 million. Well, no, because they did the in your house giving away a house thing where they were calling people.
Yeah, it was the very first one.
And then they were doing it when Vince McMahon got the shit falling on him. I mean, they've done it more than once
or whatever.
Anyway,
but we get to see Sonny and Sable in the ring, who look really happy to be around each other.
And Sunny, goddamn, dude, Sunny looked so good at that point. She had like so much glitter on her tits, dude. It was incredible. I literally had to pause it and go and find her anal porn and just get into that for a minute.
You know what? It is very strange to talk about boobs and anal porn, and I'm staring at Kermit the Frog as a baby. It's a
wait, where, what? Oh, there he is. Oh, yeah. Dude, I love Muppet Babies. Dude, I used to
my Muppet Baby shirt, my Adam Cole's Muppet Baby shirt.
I'm waiting for my new Adam Cole, new Daniel Bryan Danielson, and Ruby Riott, or Ruby Soho shirts to come
so
in.
Right.
Yeah.
Oh, shit. Well, all right. So we got that out of the way. We can get to the main event, which is
The Undertaker taking on
Bret Hart.
Bret
the Hitman Hart. What was
with special guest referee?
With special guest referee, yes. Shawn Michaels. And the stipulation was if Bret loses, he can't wrestle in the US again.
And then if Shawn like caused Bret to lose, or Shawn got involved and get hit Bret, he couldn't wrestle in North America or something.
Yes, 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 exactly. So it was like he had to call it straight.
And then he's spoiler alert, super kicks the Undertaker. He hits him with a chair.
Yeah, hits him with the chair.
Yeah, because Bret's bet on Shawn, and Shawn went to take a swing, and Bret ducked and hit Taker.
This match grew on me. Yes. At the beginning, I was like, but halfway through. And there was a moment that it fully turned on me, and it was the Randy Orton fucking the snap suplex or whatever he does.
Yes.
It was fucking that. I think Bret did that to Taker, and both of them just like they both just jumped, and it just looked incredible. They both got like 4 feet in the air and were fucking, I was just like, God damn. And they really both started just giving it their all. The match itself, like Taker at this time, I mean Taker in general, like Taker is not my favorite wrestler.
Taker at this time is overworked, working injured, doing whatever he can to help with his company with this Monday Night Wars,
and not wrestling well.
Not wrestling well, and he's just doing he's going out there to do the job because he knows that this is leading to Bret versus Shawn.
Yes, and it felt like that. It definitely felt like that. And so, you know, like that was tough. I did enjoy a lot of like the match itself. Shawn Michaels' involvement. Shawn Michaels as the referee was really good.
As a match with these two names, you think it's going to be, you know, 5-star. But this match was booked to be a stepping stone and was scripted to be a stepping stone. So it's kind of sucks that's what it turned out to be. But it did help build to a bigger and better story. But yeah. This is where I get upset, where it's like, okay, cool. If you know that this match is going to be something where it's going to lead to something else, you still got to go out there and put a match on so it seems like it counts. And this is not one of those matches where it seems like it counts.
No, I agree. And it didn't feel like that, because once they put that stipulation in, and I think a lot of the smart fans knew that Bret's contract was coming up at that point, but it was still a pretty small minority of fans that were really that into the dirt sheets at that point.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it was, you know, it was a pretty, you know, it was just how is he going to win, not if he's going to win.
Yeah.
And, right. You know, like, it was all right. And, you know, Paul Bearer, I love Paul Bearer, and, like, building, you know, like, the nice thing is that, like, they do a good job. And this is one of the things I will give WWF credit for at this time, is that in the storylines that they really cared about, they did an incredible job of building these slow storylines, these long-term storylines. The story with Shawn and Bret was done really well. The story with Undertaker and Kane, like the build up to that was done really well. And, you know, like they did a good job at that point and, you know, slowly teasing it out, because they were just doing whatever they could to get the ratings. Mm-hmm. And you know, I think this is a good question of the week for a later episode. But you know, like at this point in time, you know, with WWF exclusively, you know, like leaving out WCW, was Monday Night Raw a better program to watch than any of their pay-per-views during the Monday Night Wars?
If you're comparing to this pay-per-view, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, other than, you know, the Canadian Stampede, it might be a fact where the Raws are almost always better, because that was where they were focusing the majority of their energy, you know.
Like exactly.
And so yeah, I don't know, this match for me was a 2.5 star match. It was decent. It wasn't anything spectacular. I did enjoy it, you know, more than I thought I would. I didn't fall asleep in it, which is good.
Yeah. I did fall asleep in it a couple times. That being said, I think it's one of my favorite Undertaker matches from this era.
Well, my favorite Undertaker match is coming up, and that's the Bad Blood match with Shawn. Like, that match is really good.
I mean, to be fair to myself,
is it the Hell in a Cell?
The first one, yeah.
That was Ground Zero.
Bad Blood.
No, it's Bad Blood. Kane debuts.
Oh, I thought you mean, no, you said it wasn't the Hell in a Cell match.
No, it was the first, yeah. The first Hell in a Cell.
Okay, yeah. Then yeah, it was Bad Blood.
I was gonna say, DDJ, you can't be wrong about this.
I mean, you can't go wrong with Shawn and Taker in a ring. They just they bring it.
And what were you saying, Shane?
Oh, I like you guys said, though, around the halfway point, it picked up a little bit. There was more things happening, because in the beginning, it was just like Brett laying on top of Taker and Taker laying on top of Brett.
Yes.
They did rest holds for like the first 15 minutes. And I'm like,
that's where, and this is where I get in trouble and I get heat from people. And then everyone's like, well, how are you a Shawn guy over a Brett guy? Shawn told a better story in the ring, especially when he's working against the bigger guy, of using his speed and agility to win a match, and the way he sold to make the big guy look big. Brett wrestled Brett style all the time. Like, I just don't see the Undertaker being held in that many rest holds. And I'm like, what I mean? It's like against Bret Hart.
You had to wrestle Brett's match. And I agree. And Shawn in this match over Brett, like, Brett had a couple moments, but like, even when he's giving the finger, it felt forced.
Dude, he has zero charisma.
Shawn does, like, and even at this point, he's a douchebag, but goddamn, dude, like, there's a reason why he was as successful as he was, and there was
there's a
one
reason
moment.
Why he's a giant dickhead is too, is because he came up as a small guy and nobody would work with him, nobody would sell, nobody would give him a time of day. So then when he finally politicked himself as showing he's the best and he had authority backstage, he was like, "Yo, remember when you guys told me to go fuck myself? Now go fuck yourself." Like,
my favorite moment of the whole pay per view, though, and this just reminded me, is I think before they're interviewing Shawn about his role as a referee, and he's saying, "I got my eye," and he points to the eye that now fucking just like wanders all over the place.
Is this the one where he's being interviewed backstage by Sonny?
I don't think it was Sonny interviewing. I think it was, I can't remember who interviewed.
Because there is a rumor where Sonny goes backstage to interview Shawn at a pay per view, and Shawn has her sit on his lap. And the rumor is, waist down, he's his hands up her dress.
Hell yeah.
I heard that.
My man. Well, yeah. I think we've all gotten ratings in. I'm a little tired.
I haven't.
Oh, sorry. Everyone, if you haven't gotten ratings in, get your ratings in.
I'm going to give it a 3 stars here, because I actually enjoyed the match. And I honestly think that this period of time in Brett's career is my favorite. The old anti-American thing and stuff. I really liked how he was able to be a heel everywhere, you know, in the States, and then be a revered baby face everywhere else in the world. And I think it's just one of if not Brett's best times in pro wrestling. And like I said, I like the match. I like the story with, you know, Shawn, you know, not being able to screw over Brett, and inadvertently when he tried to screw Brett, he screwed Taker, and you know, and that went that direction and stuff, you know. But yeah, there was so much good that came out of this match. So I'm gonna go a solid 3.
All right.
I'll go 3-2, but I want to give it a 2, but because Sean's there, I'll give it the extra point.